That toilet sounds interesting.
So interesting. I love it. I've been talking about it all week.
I don't think I've revealed this to you guys, but...
Whoa. Is this a Chick-fil-A segue?
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the GeekWire podcast. I'm GeekWire editor Todd Bishop.
I'm GeekWire civic editor Monica Nicholsberg.
I'm GeekWire managing editor Taylor Soper.
And I'm Kurt Slosser, Geek Life reporter.
Man, we got the Pod Squad in here. It's great.
Pod Squad. I love that. We should have t-shirts.
Exactly. So, Monica, while you were gone at a place where I don't know if you want to talk about...
I was at Burning Man.
Okay. I know some people hide the fact that they were at Burning Man.
I'm proud of it.
While you were gone, Kurt and Taylor conducted a coup, a podcast coup.
What?
We're taking over, baby.
Yeah. Kurt came in. Everybody loves him on the podcast. So he's like a fixture now.
I'm gone for 7 days and you replace me.
All right. So we have a lot to talk about this week, including the musical debut of Microsoft's Interns and the Seattle debut of a new service that's called the Uber for Kids, which might not mean what you think it means. So stick around for that. But first, there was a survey that came out this week about the preferences, the inclinations of millennials as it relates to brands out there. And I was a little shocked and disturbed by what this survey said. Kurt, you covered it. Monica and Taylor, you're both solidly in the millennial generation. So I'm just going to have you speak for an entire generation on this podcast.
We're asked to do it all the time.
Exactly. And I'm just mystified and discouraged by the whole thing. So Kurt, what is this survey and what did it say?
Yeah, I can speak to this as an old, as you guys like to call me. This survey of 1,000 millennials who were asked to pick the top three brands that they admire or love. That's the 19 to 39-year-old age group, by the way, for those of you who either aged out of it or haven't reached it yet.
So the millennials are almost 40 at the top end.
Yeah. I don't think the two people in this room who are millennials even know that 40 is coming, but it is.
I've heard some rumors about it.
It's like the new Game of Thrones theme. So this market is coming.
This marketing agency out of St. Louis called Moonsylvania has conducted this survey for 7 years. And for the previous six, Apple had been number one. So this was the first year that they were displaced. And Amazon has taken the top spot. Other brands, very well-known brands, lots of tech giants. Google's at number 7, Microsoft's at number 11. You know, there's tech companies like Netflix on there. And then there's a whole lot of retail giants such as Walmart and Target and apparel lines, you name it, everything you could think of. Except for, you know, I did an informal survey around the newsroom of, I think, 4 millennials that work at GeekWire. 2 chose Patagonia as their top brands, and those are that brand did not make the list. Another chose Starbucks, which is at number 16 on the list. And Taylor, you chose Nike.
How about the swoosh, baby?
Which is number 3.
So what exactly are we talking about? Love, loyalty, all of the above?
I think it's probably a combination. I didn't explain to the people I asked. You know, I just said, what's your favorite brand? And got those answers back. So I think it's top of mind, probably loyalty. I don't know what people are thinking when they are in love with Amazon. Maybe convenience, maybe the ubiquity of some of the gadgets that are now around our house. I don't know. You tell me.
Yeah, I'm really curious how they asked the question, because looking at this list, to me, these are the companies that millennials maybe are using more than any others. It's not necessarily about the, like, you know, corporate philosophy or even maybe even the quality of the products, although there is certainly an argument for some of these. But I see this as like, I use Amazon all the time to get stuff that I want quickly. I have an iPhone. I, you know, shop at Target or Walmart, and those are in the top 5.
So why does this freak you out so much? Why is this going to like end the world or something?
Well, my problem is, if you look at Apple, at least when they were number one, you could say, okay, it's about the design ethos and it's about the ease of use of the product. And I can see where people of all ages would have a real affinity for Apple because of the products they come out with. And to your point as well, Monica, I think the millennial generation is known, perhaps stereotyped for a real dedication, devotion to social issues and to understanding how their actions and the actions of their employers impact the world. And I think that would be great if you had, I don't know, what a company that represented that. But this is just pure commerce. And on top of that, if you look at Amazon over the past couple years, there's a real argument to be made that they've been manipulating communities around the country through things like the HQ2 search. And so for that reason, I just sit there and I go, wow, this is a little bit disappointing. Now, I would have to say that if I opened up my smartphone and if the test were which one do I go to first, I would say the same thing. So maybe I shouldn't throw stones.
Right. I mean, it depends what they asked. I think we would be looking at different results if the question was, which brand do you believe in the most or aligns the most with your values? This, to me, is like usage.
Yeah, I think it just speaks to the power of Prime. I mean, the fact that millennials love this service that gets them stuff to their door without them having to move at all. You know, it's just a push of a button. It's 2 days, maybe soon 1 day. And so I guess that's just, you know, they value that more. It is interesting just to see the perception of Amazon and how people think about it in terms of a brand or service or necessity in their lives.
I have to say, number 27 would continue the streak on the GeekWire podcast, Chick-fil-A.
You've been talking a lot about Chick-fil-A while I was gone?
Yes.
Oh, I've actually taken over the chicken beat while you were gone.
Oh, wow. So much has changed.
And I was saving my chicken thing for the random channel, but it's over this podcast.
Just treat it as a teaser. Actually, you are going to bring it back for the random channel?
Oh, no. Just wait. Okay. You got it.
All right.
Hold on for that one.
Well, it's interesting because I do think, as you said, Taylor, Prime in particular creates a certain amount of loyalty. The fact that you can get things quickly, that you know you're going to get things quickly, and Amazon has been, if anything, doubling down on that by shifting to the free one-day shipping. And I know that there was a report out this week from a prominent analyst that gave a sense for the benefit financially that Amazon is going to get from that.
And there was also another report actually this week about delivery and kind of the hardships that those last mile people, the people that are actually making those deliveries, the accidents they get in, the stress of that job. But I don't think people being surveyed are, you know, we're not thinking about that as we order our deliveries, you know, but maybe underneath, if people knew more of those stories, Amazon maybe wouldn't be number one.
What did the analyst say about the one-day shipping benefits?
It was basically about how much more revenue is going to produce for Amazon. You know, they are investing heavily in this new one-day delivery initiative, $800 million or more last quarter, probably going to be above that. But long-term, it's going to be a boon for Amazon's business because there's according to this research report, huge demand for one-day delivery. If you go out on the street and ask people, hey, would you like to get your stuff delivered in 1 day? The demand is high. So they're saying this is going to be a huge a boon for Amazon and a great investment. So,
and I think the interesting thing to watch will be the impact on the broader e-commerce space, because what Amazon does reverberates through the entire industry. And already we're seeing their competitors forced to move to, in some cases, a one-day shipping model. But one thing that I feel like is not often discussed on this topic is the other costs. You mentioned the safety of the drivers. Another one is to the environment, because when e-commerce first arrived, it was hailed as this more environmentally friendly option for shopping than people getting in their car and driving to a store. And that's true if a bunch of stuff is coming from one area and being delivered by one vehicle to another area. But the faster the shipping becomes, the more individual trips are being made and the more it looks like a traditional emission-generating retail experience.
Yeah, I've seen, you know, Amazon launched their own delivery service program, basically, where they, you know, let people run their own businesses to deliver packages. And I've seen a bunch of those blue Prime vehicles driving around Seattle almost every day now. And so to your point, more cars on the road, more gas being used, maybe not the best for the world.
So that analyst, Mark Mahaney from RBC Capital Markets, said that the shift to one-day delivery as the core benefit of Prime, one-day free delivery, could add up to $24 billion in annual revenue, which is about 10% of Amazon's overall net sales. So
that's huge.
Yeah, that is significant. It's another example, I think, of Amazon making these kinds of bets where they're spending a ton of money up front, but they have this leeway with investors where the investors say, oh, wait, this has paid off in the past when you've spent hundreds of millions of dollars or billions of dollars to do something. And clearly they're getting that kind of leeway here. And I look at it now and I go, two days. That's like 2 days. That's forever.
How could I possibly wait that long?
All right. Well, speaking of convenience, I cannot wait to hear about this Uber for Kids service because, you know, frankly, I just want to boot mine out the door. See you later. So let's get into that right around the corner. I can't wait to hear about it. You're listening to GeekWire.
I wanted a career in IT, but I didn't know where to start. WGU makes it simple. Their accredited online degree programs cover all kinds of IT specialties, and they have valuable industry certifications built in at no extra cost. The payoff? Having those certs back up my degree makes me look even better to future employers. A nonprofit university that includes top industry certs in their programs? I choose WGU. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
Hey, welcome back. It's Todd Bishop with Monica Nicholsberg, Taylor Soper, and Kurt Slosser. Monica, you covered the Seattle debut of this service called Hop, Skip, Drive.
That's right.
But the phrase that caught my attention, as I've been saying, is Uber for kids. Do they use that, or are we calling them that?
I think everyone's calling them that, but they don't use it, no.
All right. So what is this thing, and how can I get in on this boondoggle?
Well, it is very similar to Uber. It allows parents to schedule rides for their kids, and the drivers go through, the company says, this 15-point verification process that includes scans of federal databases and an in-person meeting to ensure that the drivers are safe. Obviously, safety is a very big concern here, and they've got some other things built in, like a code word that both the driver and the kid know so that they can make sure that it's the right match, and it allows the parents to monitor the rides using the app when their kid hops in.
Do we have a sense for how much it costs on average? I know that the drivers make about $32 an hour.
It's different in each market. And, you know, they just launched here in Seattle. But when they initially launched a few years ago, they said that rides start at around $20. So it's more expensive. You're paying more for the additional safety features that are built in. And another difference from Uber is that you have to schedule it at least 8 hours in advance.
This is interesting. $32 an hour is a pretty good rate. I mean, compared to things like driving for Amazon, although obviously the stakes are much higher here. It's probably harder to get into the program to drive. I can see where that bar would need to be higher and the pay would need to be higher.
Right. There's more liability and the verification process is more involved. And at least initially, they were looking for drivers who had caregiving experience as well.
So Todd and Kurt, you're the ones who have children. It sounds like Todd's excited about it. And Kurt's immediate response on Slack this morning was, I'm never going to use this service.
Not even to test it. We talked about testing it and he said, no way.
I see the need for this service in my friend group, especially with friends who have teenagers who aren't yet driving and the frustration around how many places those teens want to be and how their parents have to take them there. My son is already using public transportation in a group with his friends when needed. We've yet to attempt to put him in an Uber by himself or ask him to get an Uber. He doesn't have that app, but it's dicey, man. I don't know if I would trust watching him drive away with what is essentially a stranger, however well vetted they are. It's just, I take a lot of stock in how I drive and how safe I think I drive. And it's my kid and I want to be responsible for that.
When you think about the different ways to get your kid around, other than driving them yourself, like maybe they take a bike or take the bus or a service like this, like where does this fall on the spectrum of comfort for you?
I think it's way low. I would rather see my son ride off on his bike than get in a car where there's this personal connection in a space that he can't get out of with a stranger. And especially, I mean, his sister's 6 years younger. I don't even think it's something I would ever consider. I don't know. It's a dad thing.
So I will say, Kurt, now that you've gotten all serious here, I love to play the nonchalant father on the podcast, but I've got to say, my wife would tell you that I am Mr. Paranoid, and I do have a little bit of pause when I look at this. I feel much more comfortable leveraging a network of friends if needed. And the nice thing there is you're trading favors and you're not doing it one for one. You're just saying, hey, I'm here to help you and I know you'll be here to help me down the road. And if you're not, you're no longer going to be my friend. No, I would never say that. But in some situations, in some cities, that's not the way it is. We're fortunate to live in a city with, you know, somewhat tight-knit communities and you can create those relationships. But it would be nice to rely on a paid service at times if it was safe and if both you and your kid felt comfortable.
I don't know if this is an option because I've never used the app, but it seems like what I'm hearing is it would make a big difference if you could request the same driver over and over again and form a relationship with them where it wasn't a stranger each time.
I don't know. I don't consider myself a helicopter parent. Like I said, go ride your bike, get out of the house, go explore the neighborhood, do whatever. He even takes the bus to the mall with buddies. It's just that this feels different. I don't know. I'd have to watch it in action when somebody tests it.
It's interesting in the context of it seems like more and more, at least, you know, when Monica, you and I were kind of 16, 17, I was excited about getting my license. But I think there's a trend of teens not wanting to drive or not wanting to have that car or even go get the license. So in that sense, it's interesting that this type of service would maybe be more appealing and more used as, you know, you have teenagers 15, 16, 17 that aren't even wanting to drive at all and they want to have a service like this. But then it goes up to the parents and whether the parents are comfortable with it too.
And then you think about the advent of even more types of transportation methods like self-driving cars. I feel like for the past 5 years, we've been hearing like my kids are the last generation who are going to learn to drive. And the adoption's not going quite as fast as that, I don't think. But it is interesting to think about how much freedom was attached to getting your driver's license as a teenager when we were growing up and how that might be a freedom that's just kind of already in existence for younger kids.
It's really interesting that you bring that up about self-driving cars because that creates a fascinating question. Would you feel more comfortable with a robot or a stranger driving your kid?
I like the robot option.
Wow. Oh, I don't know. I was there secondhand when Taylor and John took their legendary trip in Pittsburgh where they almost got killed. It's one of those stories that gets better and better or worse and worse as it gets told over the years. But it was an early self-driving car, an Uber. And bottom line, it was scary and it made you less confident in the future of that technology.
It's a fascinating question that goes beyond just cars. You know, would you trust the human or do you trust the robot?
But at a certain point, I mean, it's also scary to put your kid on a bike on a street that has human drivers. I don't think there's ever going to be a mode of transportation for them that doesn't require parents to kind of white knuckle it a little bit.
All right. So the service is called Hop Skip Drive. It debuted in Seattle this week. It's a Los Angeles startup. And if anybody out there tries it, let us know how it goes. Email us at tips@geekwire.com because I can tell you neither Kurt nor I is going to try this thing with our kids. Although maybe I should. We'll see. Possibly there may be a follow-up.
Stay tuned.
I feel like I've done my part by switching from iPhone to Samsung already, so I don't need to do any more experiential sacrifices on my end. All right. Coming up next, it's the Random Channel. You're listening to GeekWire. Welcome back. It's time for the Random Channel, that moment of the week when we talk about some of the random items we were buzzing about behind the scenes at GeekWire this week. Kurt, what you got?
Todd, you've covered Microsoft quite a bit. Have you ever seen anything come out of Redmond quite like Microsoft the Musical?
This is a video that was created by the company's summer interns with support from its full-time employees. You called it a singing, dancing romp across the campus, which felt like it was like your plug for a Broadway show.
They billed it as a Tony Award opening type number. And I felt like I got in the element there in writing this thing up this week. This popped up on YouTube after we spotted a tweet that said, is this real? And 8 minutes later, I think we determined that it was real. It's dancing software engineers and dancing data scientists, and they're all wearing the primary clothing, colored clothing, like they look like something out of a Windows ad, except it just goes on, and it mentions way more than Windows. They talk about Azure, HoloLens, Office, Minecraft, Surface, PowerPoint. Even Clippy gets a mention in this thing.
All right, let's get a taste of what this thing is like.
Modernize the office, we admit we do it well. At documents and spreadsheets, we exceed, no, we excel. We steal the show with PowerPoint, in that we take our pride. To all our competition, we say thank you. Next slide, it's all happening here.
All right. So that is Microsoft the Musical. It is, in fact, made by their summer interns with help from the employees. And don't they have better things to do? I mean, these people are supposed to be getting ready for careers where they're going to change the world. I guess maybe I'm just an old guy and kind of cranky.
I think it's cute. I like it.
It's cool. And I think it's a good recruiting tool.
Yeah, it makes it look fun to work there.
Clearly, they are going after the tight market for interns and for future employees. As Taylor said, recruiting is a hot topic up here, and man, it shows the campus in its best light. These happy kids are dancing all over different offices. They're playing video games.
It's sunny.
Bill Gates gets a mention, of course.
That line about the phone is hilarious, and it would make you think that maybe they don't have sore feelings about the whole Windows Phone thing anymore. But I have to say, as both a programming note and an inside story, I got to interview Brad Smith, Microsoft's president, about his new book, Tools and Weapons. And for GeekWire podcast listeners out there, This will actually be a special episode of the show that you can tune into on Saturday night. It will be on GeekWire and in your podcast feed as of Saturday at 9 p.m. Pacific. And as I was winding down the interview with Brad Smith, I took a picture of him with my new Samsung Galaxy Note 10 Plus. And I made a point of saying, yeah, Brad, it's like the new Windows phone because of the integrations between Samsung and Android and Microsoft. And he didn't laugh. Oh. In fact, he kind of looked at me like that was a little bit of a cheap shot. And I was like, I've started to explain myself. And then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to dig myself a deeper hole. So I just moved on.
Maybe he just didn't get it. Maybe he hasn't been tracking this quite as closely.
Well, Satya Nadella was on stage at the Samsung event. I'm sure he, well, you may be right. He's been busy with a book tour.
He's busy.
And writing a book. And it's an excellent book, by the way. And I think that's probably all I can say under embargo until 9 p.m. on Saturday.
Hey, I thought it was funny.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of which, let me use that to segue into my Android experience just a little bit. Taylor, you've been making fun of me as you've been looking at the home screen of my Samsung.
Not making fun, just critiquing.
Yeah. The first thing you said was that I had the icons too big. And I want to say, I actually have doubled down on that since you made that comment.
Did you make them bigger?
Yes. And afterward, Taylor followed up on Slack and he was like, hey, I wanted to apologize for that. I didn't want you to think that I was saying you were old. And I was like, I didn't think you were saying that.
I do now.
Until you just said that. But look, this is the wow. Basic.
Oh my God. Good Those grief. Are huge.
That's like 8 feet away. I can read everything on your phone.
Isn't this awesome though? I love it because a couple different things. One, that creates the people pane here to the left. So I can immediately swipe to the left and see all of the key people. Kurt, you're right here. Don't worry. In my life. I just realized that. Anyway, I need to, there's a space for you right there, Kurt. Oh. That's where you're going. And then you scroll. But the thing is, I love it because one of the things I do like about Android is that you can do this where you have the main apps on your home screen on the top, and then you go down. So I just put the key things that I use up here, and that's it. It reduces the clutter. I will say, though, the home screen notifications, I have been struggling. The beautiful thing about iOS is that you can just immediately see them on your home screen. But here on Android, it's like, I got to press, and then it's not really all of them. And I think your point, though, Taylor, was you think I have too many notifications?
Is that the point? When I get one, I look at it and swipe it out and get it out of there. I don't know how, Monica, you do it, but look at how many icons he has on his notification thing. This is a crisis.
Oh, that is a crisis. I agree.
Okay. All right.
Everyone stop what you're doing. We need to address this.
So how does it feel, Todd? I mean, you've come to the good side and...
It's been a little bit difficult, honestly, and I still need to sit down and write up my thoughts and my experiences with the Windows integrations, which was the main reason I did this, ostensibly. I will say that I did the trade-in for my iPhone X, and I made the decision to eat the cost after I made the trade-in. And so I actually decided not to trade it in. And so I have to pay an extra $300 for a few reasons, one of which is I feel like I need to have an iPhone around to test things if they come up. But also, I'm not entirely sold, which,
yes. Go back.
Yes. Which I can get into a little bit. It's just Android, it's not that it's not usable. It's certainly usable. It takes some adjustment, and I'm sure a lot of this is me, user issues. But I think it also speaks to the fact, and Monica, you and I were talking about this, that I think if Android's a B+ or an A- in terms of user experience, UI, clearly iOS is an A+, and it's difficult to even make that incremental reduction in experience for me.
Yeah, I agree with that. I love my Pixel 3, but that's because the most important thing to me is the camera, and I don't think there's a better camera out there. But there are some things that are just not quite as finessed or smooth as an iPhone, and it makes you really think about how high the level of skill and expertise must be between the makers of these two phones, because it's not like Google is hiring any dummies. Like, they also have top of field people working on these phones, but there's something about Apple that is just has worked out the teeniest kinks that you wouldn't even know were there unless you switched.
And now people who are real Android fans would sit there and say, well, yeah, but you're getting a dumbed down experience with iOS. And one of the things that I'm intending to do is to spend more time with the widgets and other types of customizations that you can do with Android. Not quite at the point where I'm going to sideload a homebrewed Android install. But, you know, I do appreciate the fact that it's customizable.
Yeah, I haven't done any of that. I'm kind of dumb. I need the dumbed down version.
Well, clearly I do too, if you look at my icons.
They are large.
This is interesting. I'm the last of this pod squad on iPhone.
Yeah, you are.
If you're listening, Tim Apple. I'm still loyal.
All right. Do we want to talk about Burning Man or chicken next?
Maybe we can find a way to connect them. I just got back from Burning Man, and I've been reflecting a lot on it in the past few days being back here and back in the office. And I think that one of the most interesting reflections I've had and connections I've made to GeekWire is this idea of innovation, because we often talk about how, while we're kind of a tech news site, I think of us more as a site that really covers innovation and creativity. That is what this event is all about. You know, there have been a lot of articles about how the temporary city is a real model for innovation and urban planning. It has more bikes per capita than any city in the world. But there were so many things throughout the week that were clearly built by technologists and really creative people, from the art installations to biofiltering toilets, which I am very gung-ho about. They are an alternative to porta potties that are really nice, and they naturally decompose the waste and turn it into fertilizer.
Straight into your garden?
Straight into your garden.
Wow.
But it's clear that very smart, creative people, engineers, are behind a lot of the things that you experience there. And there is a long history of connection between kind of Silicon Valley and the tech industry and Burning Man. Sometimes it's highlighted in a negative way. There's certainly like talk of tech billionaires who just kind of parachute in and don't really participate in the event in the spirit that they should. I personally haven't really experienced or encountered that ever there. But what I have encountered is really, really smart people with deep technical and engineering expertise using that creativity not to build products and make a lot of money, but to test really interesting ideas.
Seems like a crazy melting pot of tech and innovation and art and dust.
And lots of dust.
And I got to say, based on just my observations of what you have to go through to prepare, it seems like a hell of a lot of work. And I don't think I'd be up for that.
It is. It's like the work and the fun really kind of meet in the middle. And you wonder throughout, like at many, many points throughout the process, if it's worth it. But it is.
Nice. Well, welcome back to reality.
Thank you. This reality, anyway.
Such as it is.
That toilet sounds interesting.
So interesting. I love it. I've been talking about it all week.
I don't think I've revealed this to you guys, but if
Whoa. Is this a Chick-fil-A segue?
If this whole journalism thing doesn't work out for me, I've always been passionate about nice toilets. You know,
really?
I love Japan. I love going to Japan. I'm half Japanese. And if you ever go to Japan, you've probably experienced that they have the best toilets. I mean, seat warmers, water options. Anyways, long story short, I thought I could be a good toilet salesman in the U.S. for nice, luxurious houses that need nicer toilets. I don't think people really understand how much of an advantage the nice toilets give you.
That is an extremely specific alternate career.
Did you have this discussion with Shaq once?
We were talking about smart toilets. Yeah, Shaq and Charles Barkley. Yeah. I didn't admit to this career passion of mine.
You know, it's really interesting, Taylor, because you've never disclosed this or shared this. But I have to say, first off, don't stop doing journalism. But I see this. Like, you have an appreciation for the finer things.
Well, I could combine the nice toilet seats and warm with this biodegradable idea. Mm-hmm. Then it's like a no-brainer. You got to buy that.
Environmentally friendly. They're portable. It's genius.
Well, the Gates Foundation, you know, has this competition that they've done for a few years, Reinvent the Toilet. And, you know, Bill Gates has tons of fun with that. And they had a fair that I went to once. And yeah, it's all about using natural resource, not natural resources, but like using the sun, using things that don't require a lot of energy to basically figure out what to do with all the poop and the pee.
And look at the crap you already deal with around here.
Oh, he was waiting for that.
We double punned. We punned at the same time.
Too many puns.
All right. Well, can that be your random channel?
That can be random channel.
We have to talk about chicken again.
My chicken thing was
but we teased the chicken.
Yeah, well,
let's hear it.
Well, I have another admission to make. I went on Google News and searched chicken, and I searched fast food to find my chicken item for this week. And lo and behold, there is one. Super Size Me 2 is about to debut this month. If you remember Super Size Me, the documentary about the guy who eats McDonald's. Anyways, this one focuses specifically on chicken and fried chicken. So apparently the reviews aren't that great. So like I said, it was kind of a lame chicken one, but wait for next week. I'll be back with another.
All right. Until next time, I'm Todd Bishop.
I'm Monica Nicholsberg.
I'm Taylor Soper.
And I'm Kurt Schlosser.
Don't forget to tune in at 9 p.m. or whenever you get to it to our special interview with Microsoft President Brad Smith about his new book, Tools and Weapons. That's 9 p.m. on Saturday, September 7th on GeekWire. Subscribe to the podcast, give us a rating and a review, and we'll talk to you next time on our weekly roundup.